Yes, I'm still on. I apologize.
Okay. Okay, we're going to continue now.
Okay.
All right, everyone. We're going to go ahead and reconvene the County Commission meeting. Moving along now to item number 11. No action. We have no public comment. This is a committee and staff reports. Let's see here. Does anybody on staff have to get out of here to another meeting or anything that need to hurry up and get out? Right. Seeing none, Mr. Quam, do you want to start out there? Oh, wait, no. You're an agendized item anyway, you're not. We'll hold off on that. And that, Mike, you want to go ahead and start off?
Gallagher says I don't need to talk.
For the record, Mike Nevin, Public Works. Just a couple of informational items for the board today. The new wastewater plant is online. We began accepting sewage into the plant late last week. It's running as planned. We're in compliance. We were in compliance with our permit 2 days following, so that's a good sign. The existing facility is being demoed as we speak. They're anticipating substantial completion. The contractor should be out of there by the 16th. We have a final walkthrough on a punch list on the 11th, which is next Wednesday. So with any luck, like I say, probably end of March, that will all be a completed project, and we are operating the new plant, so that's a good thing. The reservoir projects pretty much complete. There's a few little punch list items left to do on the Divide reservoir. In fact, the contractor was up there this morning when I left to come to this meeting, so just a couple of little odds and ends to clean up there and then finish up the fencing along the north perimeter of the pond up there that faces on to the north. So they're just waiting for some material to come in there. The courthouse roof on target. It appears that the north side will be complete in the next couple of days. They're probably about 90%, and then they'll move over to the south side, and I think they're anticipating a completion date of sometime middle of April, if everything holds true to form and the weather cooperates. So move along with that. The tenant improvements that we've been working on of late at the Tri facility there are pretty much wrapping up. We have a contractor in there this week that is installing the drop-in ceiling in the training section. The flooring on the south side in the county section is complete, and then we'll once they finish the drop-in ceiling on the north side, we'll get the floor finished off in that section. So basically, the switch portion of that building that they're going to come into is complete as far as the amount of work that we had to do for them. So they'll probably be getting their contractors in there and doing some finish-up work that they need to complete before they move their office location in there. And other than that, that's all I got for staff report today.
Any questions for that?
Thanks.
You're fencing off the divide pond?
What's that, Jack?
Fencing off the divide pond?
Yeah, both reservoirs are fenced. They have to be for liability concerns.
Not the small one up there by the end?
Correct, yeah.
So yeah. It's closed off to public?
Yeah, it'll be locked off. And eventually, you know, our thought is to put a park scenario up there, but in the interim, because we've got water in there and liability, you know, somebody falling in there with, you know, there's nobody around, there's no monitoring system there, so, yeah.
Right.
And the pond is full, so.
You know, Mike, also, I assume you know, but I met with Rob Freud yesterday in the afternoon. He indicated they're installing right now a wireless technology on the water tank above City Drive that will allow us to use wireless throughout the park at this point. They're going to put that in with direct communication down to the community building.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah, right, exactly. In fact, we'll be tied into that as well, at that facility. We'll be tied in.
They're putting it in immediately.
Yeah, I think they're wiring now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's good. Good news.
See that technology here, and couldn't we use that technology here in Virginia City?
Sure be nice, wouldn't it?
Huh? Right.
Yeah.
Maybe we ought to negotiate that into the...
There we go. Some kind of in our lease agreement or something with them. Yeah. Certainly. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. The Comptroller's Office, Mr. Gallagher?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Hugh Gallagher, Story County Comptroller. I have two items. During the last meeting on the, I believe it was the 17th of February, I mentioned the park tax fund and that I would try and put a discussion action item as to what the resolution of that with regard to the penalty interest that was requested by one of our residents. That all of that did not come through in the last couple of weeks, but I do have an update for which at some point in time we will now get this solved. As we know, the park tax fund has been going on for quite some time, and I don't blame the residents from the various park facilities for wanting to know exactly what is in that fund. And the basis pretty much was that in previous years it was the accounting for it was probably not up to standards, and so we bit the bullet. We asked Stacy Buccaneri and Dean Hamer's office to go through every single permit and pretty much document that from the inception all the way to continue. So we have done that. We have documented all of the expenditures from that, and in the process we have adjusted those expenditures from those park funds, which were not related to any construction items in the fund, in the parks, which were Sandy Hut expenses, heat, light, and power utilities, things of that nature. We backed all of that stuff out, made that an expense of the county, and so now we're ready, for the most part, to go through what I would call the last phase or the interest phase of this. During the last, probably in the last 4 days, I've got what I consider a favorable opinion as to not calculate penalty interest. Penalty interest is noted in NRS, I think, 99, which is prime plus 2, and it reverts to a penalty portion of this. I never thought that it was a penalty. Since we in good faith took the money, we put it in a fund. It was not a special revenue fund, but a fund within and designated it by the actual location of the park. Consequently, after I got here, we did make this a special revenue fund. And so now comes the calculation of the interest. And in talking to the state treasurer for the state of Nevada, and through our clerk treasurer, it is my opinion right now as to calculate this interest based upon the local government investment pool, historical distributed interest rate, which means that when we get, where we put our funds, if we want to invest our funds, we put it in the local government finance pool, which is the authority, and it's the custodian is the state of Nevada treasury. I was lucky to get some documentation from them. However, their documentation only goes to 1999, understanding that the resolution and the ordinance and all of the calculations revert back to the beginning of the park tax fund, which was probably 1992. I'm still trying to request that information from them. In the absence of that information, what was told to me was that they pretty much follow the U.S. Treasury bond rate for anything. So in absence of any of that, I will go back and try and get the U.S. Treasury bond rate for those years and make my calculation based upon that. So where we are with this is that I know what the balance of the funds are now. I will now start calculating it from the inception of the money received through hopefully December 31st, December 31st of 2014, book that interest and continually now book the interest in those funds in all the previous months as those funds are required. So that's my report on the park tax fund. Again, it's one of those processes that I thought I needed to take and see it through, because the penalty phase interest of the prime plus two was I did not think was an appropriate way to calculate the interest. So that's where we are on the park tax funds. If you have any questions, go ahead.
Good question. We've identified the park fund and how much each community is entitled to, subject to writing an interest. Have we got a platform, a procedure for them to utilize these funds, or what the process they're going to go through during future months?
I think the process has been, Commissioner Govan, that if they've got a request for, let's say, playground equipment, construction, it's pretty specific as to what you can use those items for. So consequently, when it will depend upon either the residents of the particular, whether it's Lockwood, Mark Twain, the Highlands property owners, or the residents here in Virginia City, come up with an idea. We can sit down there, we'll figure out what the most logical avenue of that expenditure will be, and then either Mike's crew or we will contract it out and get that job done.
I think what I'd ask is that we look with staff and establish a procedure that we all understand, and how we can put those funds to use when, and what the platform uses.
My other item that is concerned with the our decision whether to go off guaranteed share or not. I am going to have a meeting with Tom Gransberry tomorrow. We will brief County Manager Whitten on our findings, and we are just trying to update to make sure that every possible thing that we can think of that can happen or may happen, we're at least prepared for it, or we can put a number to it. From my previous discussions with and meetings with Tom Gransberry, at this point in time, it looks favorable for us to move off guaranteed share, unless there's some sort of, something falls from the sky tomorrow during my meetings with him as his updates incur for the relative reports that come out of the Department of Taxation. We've got, you know, the economic indicators with statewide and also through Story County. We have our out-of-state sales numbers for which we would not get. We would have to share that with everybody being on guaranteed share. We would not have to share those numbers if we were off guaranteed shares, which is one of our criteria. And understanding what is collected from Story County and what we actually receive, those numbers can be, you know, for a year annualized, for even this year, can be in excess of $875,000. So understanding all of that, where we're going, the prospects of what's happening in the industrial park, also in Virginia City, unless there's something that hits us right between the eyes that we have not seen, I will tell you that if my recommendation will probably be to County Manager Whitten, is that through Tom Gransberry's and Meyer's effort, that we will probably suggest that we go off guaranteed share and notify the Department of Taxation of that.
My understanding was we have to make that that commitment or request by the end of February. So you have an extension of something?
I file an extension just because of a failsafe that said that we wanted to stay on guaranteed share. That can be revoked and will be revoked if we decide to go after to go off guaranteed share. Guaranteed share. The Department of Taxation Commission meeting is Monday, March 9th. My process would be probably if we decide to not stay on guaranteed share, that will be a probably a conversation with the Director of Local Government Finance, Terry Rubalt, and say that we want to withdraw our waiver at that point in time and probably not even have to appear at the commission meeting. So we would be automatically off at that point in time.
Everything okay? Sounds great. Okay. Great. Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. Sheriff Montanaro. You out there?
Nothing today, Mr. Chairman.
Special counsel?
Not today. Thank you.
Austin?
Okay. Just a couple things. Want to let you know our team is still working on our health benefits packages. And we're in the middle of the bidding process right now for our annual bidding period. And so far, you know, regardless of all the conditions that are going on with health care and everything, our insurance carrier Prominence, which was St. Mary's, had come to us with a proposal that was a little bit higher than we expected. So I asked LP, I said, let's go back and kind of look at a strategy on getting some bidding and a little bit of competition. So they did. They went to Cigna, they went to Hometown, all of the different, and St. Mary's, which we have now, are Prominence. They came back. They're keeping the premiums the same, not going up, and then even improving our deductible or our total out-of-cost, out-of-pocket. So that is probably what we're going to go with. At this point, we're probably also going to look at changing our dental program over from Reliance over to Lincoln, and Lincoln provides a little bit better benefit but a little bit better cost. So far the county doesn't look like it'll incur any additional costs for its health care provisions for its employees. We will have all of this stuff pretty much wrapped up by the end of the next couple weeks, and then we'll be going through our open enrollment period at the end of March, where all of our employees will come and they'll be able to opt to stay on the PPO or HSA or switch to the other plan. And so other than that, everything will stay pretty much the same in that department. Important area we're dealing with, I'm still working with our title companies and also working with other agencies with regard to our lands bill. As we know, that's been approved now by Congress, both houses, and by the President. And this is the bill to transfer those properties from the BLM over to Story County, and then Story County will be able to convey those properties over to the residents here in Virginia City and Gold Hill. There are some challenges with language, some intricacies that I've been working on with that, and fortunately BLM down there, Leon Thomas, we're all pretty familiar with him down in the Carson City office, has really reached out to us to collaborate with him and his team to work even in D.C. And try to get this thing straightened out, get it simplified as much as possible, and be able to convey this property as simply as possible through the quitclaim deed process. And fortunately, I think it is a huge step forward with us working with the BLM office down in Carson City, being able to collaborate on something with a mutual direction. And their team wants to, they've used words like to keep this as non-bureaucratic as possible and to make this as simple as possible to get this done within the time period pursuant to the bill. The time that we spent, and I know Pat wants to talk on a couple things we did in D.C., I had an opportunity also to speak with our representatives in the Senate and Congress and their staff on the exact matter at hand and letting them know kind of what we're doing as far as trying to get these lands conveyed over. And their staff are also going to work with the BLM on just providing some communications and some structures on making sure this gets through as simply as possible. And I also had an opportunity to speak with the chief staff over the Department of Interior, central headquarters in D.C., and discuss the same thing. And they had provided me some direction on do this, don't do that, make this, again, as simple as possible. So I really commend those parties for wanting to work with us on that. And I'm very confident that we'll be able to get these lands transferred over so that we don't have the challenges of BLM coming and saying, we believe that we own your land. You've got to go through cadastral surveys to do anything. You've got to go through environmental impact statements or environmental assessments. And those sorts of matters will become passed. And we'll be able to use our land as private property as it should be. Last but not least, it's a couple items here I want to talk about. I want to provide this board an update on the master plan process and the community workshops. We are now at the point where text is on paper and it's posted online. Anybody can look at it. And we've had multiple, I think we're on 8 or so workshops now, with another one coming this Thursday down in Lockwood. And these are the elements that are starting to formulate and where the text really points to. And I'm just going to hit a bullet point very quickly and very simply. Basically, we would divide the county into 8 planning areas, and they would be a river district. They'd be Largo Mocino, which would be the kind of the interior area north of the Highlands. They would be the Highlands, the Comstock, Mark Twain. They would be the Fernley area, which right now we're calling Northeast. We don't have a name for that yet. Painted Rock and McCarran. And each of these areas in the county, as delineated on a map, would each have their own little mini master plans. And those master plan elements would deal everything from transportation to housing to industry to growth to mining to whatever subject you can think of, but they'll all be tailored for what the needs are in those specific areas. And then each of those areas will have discussion on interface between the areas. So something that occurs in the Largo Mocino district doesn't adversely affect the Highlands district, or not district, planning area. Just in general, the Highlands would look at as a key element, but not exhaustive, water management and interface with other districts or painted or areas. Painted Rock would look, as we discussed, mixed uses, commercial, residential, and industrial, transportation, and the Painted Rock housing development that was approved in 2006. The Lockwood would have specific area plans, potentially, that would look at Lockwood, Mustang, and the waste management area, and how those areas interface with each other and interrelate to each other. And then the Mark Twain area would emphasize water management, the basalite mine that exists down there, and interface with existing Dayton as it continues to expand and grow. This is draft at this point, but we have discussed as 5 key goals that the master plan would essentially have on its cover page, and then all the goals and objectives beyond that would be based on these, and these draft are so far, and have changed even since our last meeting, is to manage growth that enhances economic development, sustainability, and the existing lifestyles that exist in our existing communities. A second goal would be to maintain a distinct character of each community, making sure that those communities remain as they were and are, and manage safe and sustainable water with an emphasis on management of underground and surface water resources, and to minimize conflicts between industrial, residential, and other uses by having appropriate planning. So that essentially is the direction the master plan is going so far. I welcome anybody to attend the Lockwood meeting at the Rainbow Bend Clubhouse at 6 o'clock this Thursday, and we'll have our next meeting down there and hear what the people in that community would like to see happen in this document. And that's all. Thank you very much.
Great. Anything from the clerk's office? Nothing? Did I miss any elected officials or staff?
Can I weigh in?
Here.
Yeah, let's see if you're off your mute button.
Thank you. Two real quick things. One is just to put Hugh's one comment on the hearing to chair decision into proper context, because I know it might be questioned. We did make a decision initially to go ahead and petition to stay on guaranteed share. That was the decision Commissioner Gilman had to pass by, I think, the end of February. So we did that, but we did that with full knowledge, clear up to the deputy director's level, confirmed to Hugh that we can rescind that anytime up to the tax commission's meeting on Monday. And again, I anticipate, so we don't walk into a tax commission meeting and say, golly gee, changed our mind. We'll probably be making that decision either tomorrow or Thursday and then going through the proper procedures should we jump off. But as Hugh indicated, that's the way the numbers seem to be crunching that Tom Gransberry has provided. One of the analysis that we did that I thought was really interesting was that we took as if nothing industrial or commercial happened, i.e. Tri went totally stagnant. We only looked at retail. And there's a certain level of sustainability there, and probably better said, yeah, we might take a hit, depending on how big in any year the guaranteed share pool is. But it is solid, and it is getting more solid, not only in Virginia City, but also in Lockwood and Deptford, now back out at Tri. So we're pretty confident that's where this decision is going. And then the only other item I have on my agenda is, and I'll really defer this to Commissioner McGuffey and Chairman McBride, that I'm grateful joined us back in D.C. All last week and then some. I have probably done this about 5 years, and at least 1 year, maybe two, had to do it twice in a year when it asked to testify before subcommittees. This was, without a doubt, the best, most successful visit we've ever accomplished back there. Working with retired Congressman John Porter is definitely a magic ingredient. He knows what doors to open, which staff to talk to, what to say, and he and his staff, Rob Mauer, are just stellar. I think we made more progress on the zip code in less than a week than we made probably in the last 15 years. So I'll, that's my report, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Pat. Okay. That being the last of the staff, we'll move on now to item number 12, board comment. Commissioner McGuffey.
Yes, I have to say I do agree with Pat, but then that was my first trip to Washington, D.C., and I was very impressed, especially with Senator John Porter. He kind of held our hand and took us to the right people. It was very educating. The staffs that work for Mr. Reed, Amadei, Titus, I'm not forgetting his name.
Howard Miller.
They're pretty much young people. They're interns, but they're like the top of their class. Very educated, very smart, a lot of energy. I was impressed with our trip. Of course, we focused primarily on gaining more. Another zip code, primarily for the tri area, and everybody seemed to be receptive. And I think that's because of Tesla's kind of put us on the map and got us in the microscope. So now they're listening to us. So I think that's going to move along fairly well. I think. Thank you.
Thanks, Aaron. Commissioner Gilman.
Nothing new. Thank you.
Nothing new.
Nothing.
On last week's trek to Washington, D.C. for National NACO, we didn't get to spend as much time participating with the NACO delegation as we have in the past. We were with the Douglas County people on some of our office visits with the Washington Congressional delegation. So we either met with or talked to either the staff or congressmen and senators. The only person we didn't get to talk to personally this time was Harry Reid, because he's been pretty busy getting his surgeries and stuff done with the repair of his eye from his accident. But we met the new congressman from Southern Nevada, Crescent Hardy. It's pretty funny. I played basketball against him in high school, so that goes back quite a ways. Met Mr. Heck for the first time, and he's a very, very nice fella. Dean and Mark, always, they're very gracious, and they give us all the time we need. Usually you get about 12 to 15 minutes, and there's a knock on the door. It means you have to move on because there's people behind you that get their 12 or 15 minutes. So with Dean and Mark, Congressman and Senator, they give us all the ample time that we need to get our point across. Met Congresswoman Deena Titus for the first time, and she was wonderful. She was very gracious. Each and every one of these people take our concerns extremely serious. And they have their whole staff there taking notes, and we're going to stay in contact with them on a regular basis because we're pushing extremely hard on these issues for Story County. So, great trip. We got a free day on Sunday, so because nobody meets on Sundays in Washington, and so we were able to go ahead and see great sights like the Library of Congress, and Jack and I walked the mall. We walked from the Capitol to the Lincoln Memorial, which I think also says about 3 miles, and because you know Washington is a wonderful city, and everybody should spend time there to see what our heritage is, but don't go in February because it's really cold back there. It's really cold. That's all I have on those lines. I don't know. I think most of you know that the passing of Matthew Antonovich. It was in the newspaper. He was a fixture on the Comstock for many, many years. He and family members, fondly known by his friends as Matty. So he's passed on. I read today in the newspaper, which is sad to see, friends of ours, Vince and Linda Del Carlo, who grew up in Virginia City, there's an announcement of the passing of their daughter, Lori Lee. And she was married to a man named Scott Lindy from Reno. She's got 4 children. And she was only 40 years old. So anyway, our condolences go out to Vince and Linda's, because They grew up here. Vince was a basketball star. Girlfriend was a cheerleader, high school sweethearts, and so they're still together. But anyway, can't let that pass without letting everybody know. Okay, let's move on now to item 13. Discussion only, no action, no public comment. Discussion and direction to staff regarding legislation or legislative issues proposed by legislators or by other entities permitted by the Nevada State Legislature to submit bill draft requests or such legislative issues as may be deemed by the chairman of the board to be of critical significance to Story County. This is an item that we leave on the agenda because the legislature is in session for 4 months. Pat, are you on board there?
Mr. Chairman, I am, and with your indulgence, I'd like to first start out with Mr. Quam. He has some very specific and encouraging news to contrast, I think, what he last told us. So if we can hear from Paul first, then I'll fill you in on the standard and routine bills after that.
Okay, very good. Mr. Quam.
I'll make it quick. Paul Quam. Last January, I appeared before you and pretty much threw in the towel on the natural gas project. Lo and behold, Southwest Gas had a bill introduced, Senate Bill 151, which mandates the Public Utilities Commission will go into rulemaking to create regulations in NAC for the expansion of gas service in Nevada to areas not currently being served or being underserved. And the rulemaking would involve creation of regulations that would promote alternative ways to finance expansion. This is up our alley. All of a sudden, my project has legs. The bill was introduced by people, senators from both parties, both liberal and conservative. It has an excellent chance of passing. I will monitor that. Once it's passed and if it's signed by the governor, then the ball goes in the Public Utilities Commission field, goes into rulemaking. Now, we're not alone. The city of Mesquite needs gas service. Clark County needs gas service up at Apex. When we go into rulemaking, we'll have to file intervener status to participate in rulemaking. I'll probably have to submit pre-filed testimony. But we may want to join forces with other government agencies, entities here in Nevada, and go in as a coalition. Because talking to them during the Senate hearing, their interests are pretty much our interests. We're one and the same. I think we could perhaps form a coalition here in rulemaking before the PUC. And that will take pretty much through this year, 2015. So you were right, Commissioner Gilman. When we talked in January, and I kind of threw in the towel, you mentioned to me, Paul, things do change. And lo and behold, they changed in our favor.
Thank you, Mr. Quam. Okay, Pat, do you want to continue on now?
You bet. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be as quick as I can. We attended, Commissioner McGuffey and myself, attended the last Quad County coalition of lobbyists, that's the Mary Walker Group, and just some general oversight. As of, I believe, last Thursday, there were about 400 bills introduced. March 16th, the day after the Ides of March, kind of ominously, they expect another 800 bills introduced by then, and that is the last day for bill introduction. Although keep in mind, there are a lot of abilities to amend existing bills with something that has absolutely nothing to do with the bill. So that doesn't mean the process is over, but the bulk of it should be in the pipe within, by March 16th, so within a few weeks. Encouraging still, I think, for most of us is the gridlock that seems to have, been a set pattern in the legislature for the past several sessions. Bills are coming out, and I'm told even getting signed. So, you know, they're beginning to see an awful lot of concerted effort on making things happen and at the same time hearing the budget. So hopefully we're going to be on time and over in perhaps 120 days, which would be really nice. Very briefly, we've been watching closely for any increases in pass-downs or jam-downs from the state to the local governments. And right now, about the only one that seems to be on the horizon is with Child Protective Services. And that is a service issue problem that most of the counties have felt like they're not getting good service. And so they're going to add a number of caseworkers to this to provide better service. There have been some very unfortunate, even horror stories in the larger counties. And the good news is, sitting there with Lyon, Carson, and Douglas County every other week during the session and every month, I think, outside the session, when they pass this step down, Lyon County gets hit with $750,000, $1 million, $1.2 million. And because of our low population base, you know, ours comes out to be in the single digit or sometimes the very low double digit, you know, $1,000 range. So, you know, most of these impacts for us don't strike me as going to be too onerous, but Comptroller Gallagher and Jesse and I are watching for anything, and we'll tweak that into the budget. Looking at specific bills, probably the biggest bill that we are currently lined up against is SB 59. This occurred last session. It's the Secretary of State Business Portal. And again, what they want to do is consolidate all licensing throughout the state into the Secretary of State's office. And while that sounds very convenient, it also poses a lot of problems and concerns. One is compatibility between computer platforms and who's going to pay for the cost of that. And the other, probably more critical, I think, to us is we have a provision in our ordinances that you have to be current on all of your obligations to the county before we will issue your business license. So, i.e., you can't be delinquent on taxes, even your landlords can't be delinquent on taxes. And we have used that as an effective tool to convince people they need to stay current on their obligations like everybody else does. So we're opposed right now to trying to craft in wording that will make it optional. And once it's made optional, then we'll be okay with that one. Jeff Fontaine and the NACO group continue to work on home rule. That is still being negotiated. It's never been a real popular topic, but I think it's getting more traction in this session than it has before. Don't know that I'm going to put a bet on it, but that seems to be where we're going. AB 19 is the tentative budget bill. And on this one, as best I can tell, is it actually lightens up, even though it says tentative budget, it actually lightens up what we commonly refer to as the final budgetary, that third Monday in May. And what they're probably going to do is loosen up on our local governments to say, there's nothing magic about the third Monday in May. Why don't you have it when you need it, whether that is in the month of May or the third week of May or whatever, have it really dug into the language that closely, but it's just a little flexibility tool that we would enjoy. I think the most optimistic one, and this one actually I intend to put on the commission's agenda here probably in the next meeting, is Senate Bill 170. Senate Bill 170 is a data center abatement. You could look at it specifically as switch, but you know it is for any data centers with a capital investment of over $250 million. They really are taking the state current abatements on sales and use and personal property taxes and ratcheting those up a bit because of the size of the investments and expense. We still would get, as it's currently written, 100% of our property tax, and we would participate in, it appears to be, personal property tax to a lesser degree than we might under normal abatements, and also sales and use tax. So we'll be getting our hands around that and getting that to you because it is something we want to see happen so switch and others can happen. Assessor Seddon is aware of SB 95, is working with her Assessors Association that deals with publication of property tax rolls. As you might recall, Janet was able to get a pretty effective workaround a couple years back where we use prison industries printing and then we publish. It's a lot cheaper, but this looks like it could go through. There'll be some trade-offs that we would continue to need to use the legal section of our paper record, and we have no problem with that. So that's kind of where that one is. And the last one is Senate Bill 153. Wayne Carlson with Pool PAC specifically on this one. Right now it deals with police, fire, heart, lung, there's what's called presumptive eligibility, and it is very, very restrictive as to when, it's very, very protective, I guess, of everybody. So, in essence, if you had somebody that was a firefighter for 10 years, left, went jogging and did that kind of stuff, in the end of the day, we're on the hook for heart and lung. It's not that we're against that because those are high hazard occupations, but it may be that the pendulum swung a bit too far and we need to inject some reason back in, and we're hopeful that we can. And that's the update from Nate from the Quad Counties, unless Commissioner McGuffey has anything more.
Anything on that?
Okay, thank you.
Which bill was that? The last bill?
Yeah. The last bill was Senate Bill 153 on presumptive eligibility, dealing with Part 1.
Anything else from?
No, I just, I did want to ask if you heard what bill Eric Gordon was going to push through.
I still haven't seen anything yet, Commissioner McGuffey. We have alerted Mary and Bob. We know that it's going to probably be as an amendment to something else, and we have also talked specifically with Senator Settlemeyer and Assemblyman Wheeler and said we are currently against it. I have been approached by Garrett and asked if the county would consider an extension And I told him he'd have to put that in writing, and I'd put it on the board, meaning this would be an extension of the last enabling legislation. And I told him he would have to provide me that in writing, and then we would consider putting it on a commission agenda in the future for potential action.
Any questions for Pat? None? Okay, that's going to go ahead and conclude item number 13. Let's move on now to item number 14. And this is a discussion, possible action, the approval of Story County Fire Protection District Agreement with the Nevada Division of Forestry Participation for the Wildland Fire Protection Program. Mr. Morris?
Good afternoon, Board. Robert Morris for the record. I would remind you that you're sitting as the Story County Board of Fire Commissioners for this item. It's an interlocal agreement between the district and the state. It's basically continues the existing agreement, and unless there's specific questions, I would ask you to approve it.
Do we need to recess as the Board of County Commissioners and convene as the Board of the Fire Board?
I was discussing that with Mr. Loomis this morning, and while it seems to take time, I always think it's the safer way to go is to reconvene as the Story County Board of Fire Commissioners.
Okay, and then my second question up on and that is that this is going to be a reoccurring document that we're going to see every year.
Every 2 years?
Every 2 years?
This biennial, yes.
Okay, it could almost be a consent agenda item then?
I believe so. And one of the things that I know Mr. Loomis did was make sure that the name was proper for the fire district. That's one of the things that we've talked about, making a concerted effort to get all the agencies the proper name. And in this case, it's the Story County Fire Protection District. So I believe that was the amendment that was made to this for a change. So okay. If you'd like to reconvene as the Fire Board.
Why don't we do that? Why don't we go ahead and do a call protocol. We'll go ahead and we'll recess the Story County Board of Commissioners, and we will convene as a Story County Fire Board. So that being said, it has been explained by Mr. Morris. Looking for approval of the Story County Fire Protection District Agreement with Nevada Division of Forestry for participation for Wildlife Fire Protection Program.
You might
can I provide a little comment. Bit of additional information in Chief Haynes' absence, Mr. Chairman?
Sure, go ahead.
And Chief Haynes, by the way, extends his apologies, but he is down in Las Vegas, I think doing a final walkthrough on our ambulance chassis, I believe. So that's exciting that that's moving forward because we continue to have equipment breakdown in the middle of calls. But this is our first time to renew this agreement with India and forestry, if you will. We first entered into it 2 years ago, and it has worked extremely well. There are really only two things I want to say just to remind everybody, probably especially Commissioner McGuffey. Commissioner McGuffey, we pay $150,000 a year. Each year for 2 years. This is tied to the legislature biennium or the state's biennium. And we look at it primarily as our insurance policy. Should we have any wildland fire anywhere in the county, it automatically provides us essentially unlimited services to India and above India through their mutual aid agreements with the feds. That includes aerial attacks, hand crews. I'd love to say we were very fortunate these last 2 years, and we have been, because we haven't had the devastating fires. But when we do need the NDF resources, this is a much more cost-effective way of doing it. And the great news is for us, our price did not go up one penny. We paid $150,000 a year for the last 2 years, and that amount is holding for fiscal year beginning 7/1/15 and also 7/1/16.
Pat, maybe you could follow up by going ahead and letting us know how much money we were paying Division of Forestry on an annual basis in the past, and they had total control over all the seasonal workforce.
Yeah, that's a great question, Mr. Chairman. As I recall, and again, Hugh can, if Hugh has a better memory than I do, I would defer, but I would tell you our costs were right around $500,000 a year in the MDF budget. They were probably a little south of that in the 460, 480 range. And again, you're absolutely right. We could not have any control over our own destiny. They hired their seasonals. We wanted 5-hour a week schedules, and statewide they were on 410s. We could not do that. It wasn't a bad relationship with MDF, but it was just a very structured one. So, again, I don't know, and we'll see this as part of Gary's wildland fire protection component in his budget that he submits for the next year. But I would tell you, all told off the top of our head, by the time we employ our own seasonals, which we do, and pay this $150,000, as I recall, we're saving in the ballpark area of about $100,000 a year, perhaps a little bit more.
In addition to that also is that in the past, if it was an MDF seasonal, they were only trained in wildland firefighting. So if you had a structure on fire, they could pull up in their fire truck and watch your structure burn down. But with Gary handling it through his department now, that all of his seasonal staff are cross-trained in both structure and wildland. So we don't have the same problem or the same issue as we did in the past.
You're exactly right. And one other added benefit is it has proven, our seasonals have proven to be a very effective AAA farm team, if you will. We're able to take a look at the rising stars. To the best of my knowledge, actually, our fire inspector, too, Fritz Klingler, came in through that seasonal program, and he is now our number one guy when it comes to fire inspections throughout the county, but especially out in Fox.
That's great. Mr. Morris had something you want to follow up with.
I was just going to ask that you ask for public comment before you make a motion.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have public comment on this? Hearing none, I call for a motion.
I make a motion for approval of the Story County Fire Protection District Agreement with the Nevada Division of Forestry for participation in the Wildland Fire Protection Program, WFPP.
I second that motion.
Move and second for the approval. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion carries. Okay, at this time we will go ahead and adjourn as the Story County Fire Board and reconvene as the Story County Board of County Commissioners. And we'll move on now to item number 15. Am I correct there?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, number 15. Okay, discussion of possible action and approve the second reading of Ordinance 14-261, an ordinance amending Story County Code Chapter 5.16, prostitution, to change the name to brothels, amending the procedure for revoking a license, and changing requirements on work cards, and providing for the other properly related matters.
Robert Morris again for the record. There's been a request to have this item continued, but I just wanted to talk a little bit. There's a certain formality to ordinances, and this has been agendized as the second reading or the public hearing on this ordinance. So I would ask the board if they consider continuing this matter, at least to open it up in case anybody is here specifically to talk about the ordinance so they would have an opportunity. Again, there's a second item which you could take up separately, but let me just discuss it briefly. There's a resolution setting fees for brothel licensing. That too would be continued by this request. So unless there's any questions specifically about this, and I apologize to people that had to wait for this to come up, but I think it's important if we do agendize this as a public hearing that anybody that is here has an opportunity to just speak on it.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may, I don't disagree with counsel's suggestion to go ahead and hear anybody that would like to testify. I believe that's consistent with what we've done in the past. But I received communications from the principal operator out there that we recently licensed, Mr. Donnie Gilman, indicating that due to some pretty serious conflicts that he was not going to be able to attend today's meeting. So assuming he's not in that room, that was the nature of my request. I think we owe it to the operator to be able to weigh in. And he's been a real good part of the workarounds and the agreements that have crafted this throughout. This has been a good process for everybody, I think.
Okay. So we can take any public comment on this, if anyone would like to speak.
Thanks for asking.
And Sheriff, we're on items 15 and 16 now regarding prostitution and that. We've asked for a continuance. We've been asked to continue this because Mr. Gilman's unable to attend today. Do you have any testimony you want to give today, or are you good with continuing this to the... Okay.
And so I would just ask one other thing. Since this matter has been continued several times, I think it would be appropriate for the clerk to re-notice it in the newspaper for March 17th board meeting, just to make sure that anybody that wants to knows that it's going to be the final public hearing on.
Okay, I've been asked that we continue this to the April 7th meeting.
Be continued to March 17th.
I think there was a communication mixed up there over these and the other ones that we continued to the first meeting before, but March 17th was when I had advised Donnie we choose for.
Okay. Then I get a motion on this. Commissioner McGuffey, if you make the motion to continue this and with the notify, advise the clerk to go ahead and re-notice it in the newspaper as well.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, because I have a pecuniary interest in the Mustang Ranch and this operation, I'm going to abstain from voting.
Very good.
Did we agree on March 17th?
Yes.
Okay. I'll make a motion to extend items 15 and 16 to March 17th and have the clerk re-notice in the paper of this agenda.
And I'll second your motion.
If it's all right, could you do it as two separate motions just so that you can have public comment on the other one as well?
I'll make an amendment to my motion. And we'll make a to continue item 15 until March 17th, and then request the clerk, county clerk, to re-notice in the paper.
I'll second your motion. It's been moved to second to go ahead and continue item 15 to March the 17th. Seven. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. And we'll move along now to item number 16.
I'll make a motion to move to continue item 16 to March 17th, and also have request the clerk to re-notice in the paper.
All right. Any discussion on that? Hearing none, I'll second that. Been moved to second to go ahead and continue item 16 to the March 17th regular scheduled meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. All right, moving along now to item number 17. Discussion of possible action. Approved site license agreement between Story County and High Speed Networks for internet access equipment atop the hillside water tanks. Mr. Nevin.
For the record, Mike Nevin, and I might suggest that you convene as the Story County Water and Sewer System Board for this agenda item. Would that be proper, Ms. Langer?
It would.
Okay. At this time, we will recess the Story County Board of Commissioners, and we will convene as the Story County Water Board.
Thank you. Basically, this is just a housekeeping item, if you will. Some years back, actually before I was hired as the director, there was a verbal agreement to allow high-speed networks permission to install a antenna site atop the water tanks on the south side of town. We refer to them as the hillside water tanks. Recently, there was a need by high-speed networks to install some additional equipment on a facility adjacent to the water tanks that used to be used as a chlorine disinfection point in the system, and that little block building hasn't been used by us for years. They needed to install some additional antennas and also provide some power that we feed up to that building. And I thought, well, if they're going to expand the agreement, then it's time that we should put something in writing. So I approached the district attorney's office, and through Ann and Keith down there, they suggested a site license agreement, which you have in your packet. So we're just asking that that be approved, and that allows for us to collect $150 a month for the equipment, and more specifically for the power that we provide to high-speed networks from the water treatment plant. I'm here to answer any questions.
$150 a month should be sufficient to cover the cost of the power you provide?
Correct. Then this agreement is non-assignable, so if they go away, the agreement will go away. And there's a 30-day revocation provision as well. So.
Any discussion on this? Oh, Mr. Mitchell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Clay Mitchell, a Virginia City resident. I was just curious, you know, as telecommunications and data is something that I imagine will become more and more a part of our lives, I'm wondering if there's provision for other operators, if they wanted a similar provision, or if we're setting some sort of precedent here, if it's more than just cleaning up what was there. And secondly, if there's some sort of – I went online to try to find out more about high-speed networks, wasn't able to find a working website. If there's some sort of what kind of community benefits are provided by allowing this equipment there, if it's purely a for-profit entity, or if there's for the community, what kind of benefits might be possible by having this kind of equipment in place? Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, from what I understand, that equipment does provide service to the Mark Twain Estates area, as well as points beyond into some of the Gold Hill, Gold Canyon, and into Silver City as well.
VA Liner, is there any concern about that? Is setting precedent?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think, and number one, Mr. Edmund was talking about the fact that this was a cleanup situation that's been in existence for a long time. Each and every project that would be coming to Stewart County would be brought before this board to determine what you want to do with it. So I think that we'll go case by case with each project if there are any that come before us.
Just to make mention of the fact, too, that we do, as a county, have agreements in place with Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, for the tower up here, just to the east of the ice house. The other thing I might mention is there is an existing agreement with high-speed networks. It was done some years ago between high-speed networks and the Story County Fire Department for equipment that they have installed on the now Mark Twain Community Center building. So.
Okay. Any other discussion? Board members have any questions? All right. Hearing none, I'll go ahead and ask for a motion to approve the site license agreement.
I would make a motion to approve the site license agreement for Story County and High Speed Networks for internet access equipment adopted by the site.
I'll second that motion.
Move and second to approve this agreement. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And the motion carries. Great. Moving along now. Item number 18, discussion and possible action to approve the first reading of Ordinance 15-263, adding Section 3.50.200 to the Story County Code, providing for a pilot project for granting partial abatements of permitting fees to participants in a qualified project in an economic diversification district and providing for other properly related matters. Mr. Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is... Sure.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to, in abundance of caution, I'm going to, because I have a extraordinary interest in a project that is presently includes an economic diversification district.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Continue there, Mr. Morris.
Thank you again. This is an agreement that is brought up in SB 1, which is the legislation that allowed Story County to create this economic diversification district. Now, as you recall, the board passed the ordinance 14260, creating the district in December of last year. In the ordinance, just to provide some background, there's a section that said that this would not be, the ordinance itself would not be effective until a government services agreement was made between Tesla and the county to help defray the cost of providing local government services in the district. There, SB 1 is fairly complex, and I'm very glad that Mr. Witten is on the phone. In case I misstate something, he can set it straight. But there are certain requirements put on the county by this legislation, and one of them is to make a cooperative agreement between the county and the state Department of Taxation so that they basically administer what's going to be a reimbursement to Tesla of sales and use tax that's collected. They do have an abatement, which means that they don't pay the full amount. Currently they're paying, I believe, 2.75%. That is going to the state. The state would administer that and send it back. SB 1 also contemplates that there's going to be a reimbursement agreement between the county and Tesla. So those are two agreements that we are currently working on with Tesla, but we have not concluded. And just again to repeat those, they're the reimbursement agreement dealing with the sales tax, and then there's also the government services agreement, which we're hoping that will be completed soon. So this agreement, so this ordinance is sort of the final part of what I want to talk about, and it provides for granting of partial abatements of permitting fees to the project. If the county believes that there's, it encourages local development. And so we've had ongoing discussions with Tesla trying to figure out the appropriate reduction to the fees. And the idea is that it's in, with the idea that it's encouraging local development. When we do the second reading, I'm going to recommend that there be two changes. I submitted this to the agenda packet, and so there are basically two changes that I can tell you now that we are going to ask, it'll be in the ordinance on the second reading. And those are basically the ordinance is predicated on having most of the work done by 2018. What this does is says if construction goes on beyond 2018, that we would have a chance to reopen it. So that text will be in the next in the second reading. There's also text that just because we give them an abatement, that it doesn't stop them from having to comply with all the permitting requirements that are in existence for the county for the construction of the project. So with that, and unless there's questions, so I would ask that you introduce this as a first reading. Let me talk a little bit more about the timing of these things. Because the ordinance is not effective until the government services contract comes out, we thought it was appropriate to go ahead and do the first reading on this, but my preference would be to have the second reading at the same time as we do the government services agreement and the reimbursement agreement. I just wanted to have this come forward so that we would at least take the first part of the first step on this one. And unless there are any questions.
You stated that if they go off beyond their contract, that we can go back and renegotiate it?
That's
the county or them?
It's for the county can, if I can read the text that I'm proposing. It says the county may reopen the agreed upon fees for the year 2019 and beyond if construction extends beyond 2018 or if there are any extenuating circumstances that change the basis for the fees. So that's in discussions, since this is the first time this has ever been done, we're trying to stay abreast of all the problems that we can find before we settle on a final ordinance. And so that would be one of the changes we're going to suggest for the second reading.
Any other questions for Bob?
I guess if Tesla would be aware that by that time they know that they could probably get an extension or renegotiate. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think the proposal now is that they're going to finish construction by 2018, and so the basis of abating the fees considers that. Most of the permitting is going to be in the first basically 4 years. And then if you look at the ordinance, the drop-off between 2018 and 2019 is fairly significant, and that's just because we expect that the construction will be completed by that time, and so there will be far less fees. Now, if they continue to construct beyond that date, the county needs the opportunity to readdress the amount of fees. And
any public comment on this? Ms. Bart?
Nicole Bart, Story County resident. Couple of questions. Are the fees that are listed in this document those that we will be receiving and keeping?
My understanding is yes, yes. We bought
yes. Okay, so cash in our hand, not having it to go through the many stomachs of taxation, is $556,000.
Right from the Story County Treasurer's Office.
Okay, so this is true cash flow to us.
Right.
So the full fee has been abated. This is the portion of that full fee that is partial that we're getting.
Well, the taxation portion is abated.
Right.
But Bob will have to explain.
There are many stomachs here. I'm just trying to understand which stomach this is in.
I would gladly talk to you after that.
Okay, but I don't think I'm the only one that will have this question. That's why I'm asking it publicly. So this is money in our pocket.
Yes.
Got it.
So, and this is in lieu of having the existing permitting fees that are set by ordinance, we've agreed to abate them to this specific amount.
This is all they have to pay in that district?
For permitting.
For permitting.
Yes.
Sales tax is abated by the state. Property tax is abated by the state. Right. These are purely ours.
Grading, plan review.
Okay, so that's cool.
Yeah.
Are these funds restricted in any way? If I look at 3.50.240, abatement of fees, it's authorized to impose pursuant for a 10-year period for building official and fire district permitting, plan reviews, and inspections. Is it that these fees can only be used for those activities?
Let me weigh in on that one. No, is the answer. There will be an allocation of the bulk of those monies into the general fund, which sustains community development, but also into the fire district. We're doing a percentage calculation as to, under normal plan review and building permit fees, because these are actually partial abatements of both those. Let's say that is roughly a 60-40 split, 60% of effort, work, and time provided by the building department, community development department, 40% by fire. There'll be an allocation of that, but there is also a fixed overhead cost allocation, too, that will wind up going into the general fund, because the approach we took is it's not just community development. There's a whole lot of fiscal accounting burden on the comptroller and reporting requirements, I might add, and the treasurer will certainly have some. We've had incredible amount of hours put in on the legal side. So there will be an allocation proportional to the work, but not specifically restricted to only those two.
Okay. So are these revenues, by and large, going to be spent predominantly, and by that I mean 80% plus, in TRI, on TRI activities that the county as a whole is engaged in? The converse of that question is, how much of these revenues are other communities going to be able to benefit from, a la property tax reduction, et cetera?
Good question. Pat, do you want to follow up?
Yeah, and I would probably tell you, Nicole, as we've known all along on the Tesla project, this isn't the goose that laid the golden egg. They're a great company. They're wonderful to work with. Conversely, I will also tell you they're the hardest negotiator I've ever worked with. I don't know that we will see direct fiscal benefit from these monies contained within this ordinance, because we're pretty much going to be dumping resources on inspectors and being mostly inspectors, to tell you the truth. But what we will see, and, I'm sorry Commissioner Gilman had to recuse himself on this, but I understand and I agree. Yes, what we are already seeing are, again, as we mentioned before, a number of large companies coming in that don't have this provision. For instance, to the best of my knowledge, Switch right now, I probably should be quiet about this so it doesn't happen, but I don't think SB 70 has this same provision that allows us to negotiate full to partial abatements. So this probably isn't a windfall for Story County or Story County Fire Protection in general, the way of the structure, that it will help us sustain our permitting processes throughout. And I hope I've answered your question.
Okay, so is it that this is kind of break-even for us?
I was going to say, if you're looking for a net gain, probably not.
Okay, so this particular, these numbers are break-even, which is great, because that means no money out of our pocket. The other question is this ordinance specific only to Tesla, meaning when a Switch or other companies come in, we get another document with new numbers?
Podcast said, I believe it's just the Economic Development District itself.
That's correct. Yeah. But there could be, should be, hopefully will be, other companies moving in there. So
they have to have the investment of $3.5 billion in order to qualify for that.
Okay. So
they can't come in and spend $100 million and get the deal. It has to be $3.5 billion.
Correct. It would have to meet the same requirements unless they get changed. But I was going to say it's any participant in a qualified project in the Economic Diversification District.
Okay.
Currently Tesla is the only qualified project in the district.
Okay. I had read as the deal started to unfold that Tesla was also given approximately $900 million of tax abatements by the state for them to hand out or sell to their friends and neighbors, ostensibly to a Panasonic should they want to move in, et cetera.
And Nicole, I'm not able to pick up everything, and I'm not going to talk about the macro benefits provided to Tesla through the state because I'm quasi-knowledgeable but not an official spokesperson. But the key here I want to speak to, and Bob and I can research this because I think you raise a very good point, but I want to be clear. Tesla is the lead participant in this particular economic diversification district. We know that there will be other participants as part of this project. For instance, you can assume Tesla is going to build the factory, Panasonic might equip and run it. Those types of participating partners, if you will, not the lead partner, will be eligible and will be covered under this particular program.
So same question. If and when those other participants under the umbrella of Tesla come in and co-locate in the development district, are these numbers going to change? No, we don't know them today. I'm just saying, is yet another document going to need to be presented with new numbers for them, or is these minimum numbers that then can scale up?
My answer is, if I heard your question completely, those numbers, depending on the size and scope of that, for instance, we anticipate Panasonic's investment and time in our building permitting and plan review process, and also our fire review process, My answer is we anticipate those as part of it. If there was something extraordinary and unusual, that's why that add-on clause that Council Morris referred to is being injected in there.
Okay, I'm just trying to understand this. If it says Tesla and it's limited to Tesla, and they bring in and co-locate the Panasonic or the other friends and family that they can bring, does this also cover them under the same conditions? That's all. And it's a matter
yes, it
of
does.
Doing things.
And we do have limiting language in it saying that it's the permitting, plan reviews, and inspections for the factory project. So there is a limiting language that if they do something totally different on another part of the project, say put up a wind farm maybe, that would not be covered by this. This is specific to the factory project.
And I might add, too, Tesla, well, let's go back to SB1. The enabling language in there enables local government, specifically the county or the local government jurisdiction, to have the economic diversification district to negotiate with the lead participant full or partial abatements on building permit and plan review, or on permit and plan reviews, and also business licenses. And in our discussions with Tesla early on the table said, you know what, we'll pay 100% of those. They aren't huge, but they're probably going to wind up being the second largest business license in the county year over year. And keep in mind, most of these are one-time expenses. You get the plans for the mass grading, you do the mass grading. You get the plans for the steel structure, that's done once theoretically. And the beauty about this is the way we're currently being told they're building is they're building five very similar modules. So once we nail the first one, our staff time and resources will probably reduce, hopefully significantly, and that could, Nicole, as you mentioned, translate into at least some financial benefit countywide through both the fire district and the county.
Okay. And then my last question on this one is, I've heard talking about, but we're not going to see the first rev of the governmental services agreement until the second reading of this ordinance should have been passed. Why wouldn't we wait, since this ordinance relies on the government services agreement, why wouldn't we wait to see that? Does it have to be read twice, I guess is my question. If not, fine.
No.
So
it's a single reading.
All right.
The government services and the reimbursement agreement are both single.
Okay. And does that local, will that government services agreement apply to more than the lead participant, i.e. back to when they bring in Panasonic and other people in their universe, et cetera?
The government services language in SB 1 talks about any owner of interest in the project can agree with the county to do this. So this is fairly specific to Tesla. But I assume if we make an agreement with Tesla to cover the government services, that other owners...
we can make it a prerequisite for them to participate in that district. So
right.
Whatever boilerplate question, can you make this a boilerplate that can then be used as part of the next company that moves into that district to say, here are the terms and conditions, and it just applies over and over instead of having one every time you have to do it?
And I'll attempt to answer that based on what I heard. That answer is no, and again, Council Morris and I can look at this. This is a first reading. The reason why we wanted to get it out there is so we could make any changes necessary. To the best of my knowledge, I'm not even sure if Tesla has seen this ordinance yet. Or their council, Bob can speak to that, but there will be changes in it to make sure we know what we're signing up for. Having sat through 2 days of the special session, I can tell you the geographic boundaries, my opinion, of the geographic boundaries of the EDD, if you will, that was approved back in December, will cover any co-participant. Think of it as a contractor and subcontractors, if you will. That's the best I can tell you now, but we will make double and triple sure as to what the intent was.
Okay, thank you.
Great. And, Chris, come on up.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner McGuffey, Madam District Attorney, Mr. Osborne, County Manager Witten. My name is Chris Thompson. I'm the project manager for Tahoe Reno Industrial Center. I think it's important that the folks that may read about this meeting or listening in do not get the impression that somehow this Tesla deal is a break-even event financially for the county. That's just not true. I'll give you, there's a bunch of reasons about the financial benefit to the county about why that is so big. But here's just three examples. Number one, the other companies are already coming in to TRI as a direct result of the Tesla deal. Mark Siegel's development outfit out of Chicago is moving dirt as we speak here today on a 500,000 square foot or so facility on Milan Drive. Harris Industrial Gas came in from California to serve the Tesla project in large part. Ahern Insurance Rentals bought into TRI specifically because of the Tesla project. Switch probably would never be here unless the Tesla project had occurred. Those companies are all here. There's more in the pipeline. There's more under contract. There's more in escrow right now as we speak. And those companies will all be paying full boat on property taxes, sales taxes, and the other fees in the county. So those have to be calculated in, I think, when you analyze the financial profitability to the county of the Tesla deal. Item two is the payroll coming from not only the 500 Tesla workers putting up steel right now out there on the Tesla site, but all these other construction projects and companies that have moved here, their payrolls are sizable. That money is coming into this community. It's being spent in stores. It's being spent on C Street. That money is turning over in Story County. People working in Story County are working out at TRI in these new jobs. That has economic benefit to the county. And just the last example would be USA Parkway. The fact that the state, as part of the Tesla deal, is taking over USA Parkway and doing all the build-out and all the maintenance on that road in perpetuity is a value to this county in the tens of millions of dollars. Hard money that the county is saving. And that by itself will bring in more business also into Story County. So I think it's important, and there's a bunch of other reasons why this is so financially lucrative for the county, but that's just a few. But I think it's important for people to keep that in mind. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you for that.
Any other public comment? You want to follow up on anything, Pat, or do you want us to? Otherwise, we'll go to a vote on this.
No, I think as Council Morris has so well stated, I mean, this is just one working component. Next, you're actually going to see one half of the two agreements that he referenced between the sales tax flow, between the Department of Taxation and us, but then we will need to have another agreement that passes that money on to Tesla. That one hasn't been finalized. The other one appears on your agenda today, and the government services agreement is the one that we continue to negotiate on and try to narrow in on. So this is just one leg, and I believe, well, I'm sure the intent is, because that's at least my intent, and therefore Bob will help, is we will ultimately approve this ordinance simultaneously with the government services agreement. Mm-hmm. It's just that we don't have to approve the GSA via ordinance, so two readings in 15 days, then we can kind of neat and tidy package it up by the time we get everything done. And it's all part of the negotiated process.
Very good. Did you have anything else, Bob?
No, thanks.
Anyone else? Very good. This time? Looking for a motion to approve the first reading of Ordinance 15-263.
I'll make a motion to approve the first reading of Ordinance 15-263, adding Section 3.50.200 to the Story County Code, providing for a pilot project for granting partial abatements of remaining fees to participants in a qualified project in an economic diversification district and providing for other property related matters.
Great. And I'll second your motion. It's been moved to second to approve item 18. First reading of Ordinance 15-263. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion carries. Moving along now to item number 19. Discussion and possible action to approve a cooperative agreement with the State of Nevada Department of Taxation specifying the dates and procedure for distribution to Story County of the Economic Diversification District Number 1 revenues pledged pursuant to Ordinance Number 14-260, and a reimbursement agreement with Tesla. Mr. Morris.
I'm in an abundance of caution because I have a ternary interest in this.
That's pretty well memorized. Mr. Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, this is an agreement that's basically required from SB 1. And it's a cooperative agreement between Story County and the Department of Taxation to basically administer an account for the sales tax, sales and use tax that is used in the district by Tesla. There was a little concern in the timing. Initially, I thought it was important to have all the agreements done at the same time. I would just point out that this is an agreement with the Department of Taxation and not Tesla. What it does is it allows them to enforce the provisions of Story County Code Chapter 350. And now, just to make it a little more complicated, that's the ordinance that is not effective yet based on the government services contract. So this is somewhat prospective, that it's looking forward to having the state use that ordinance in the collection of the tax. Basic document was drafted by Tesla. It was reviewed by Bill Maddox. I put Bill Maddox on the agenda sheet because it was basically his agenda sheet. And so I think it's ready to go forward. I believe that it's been signed by Dion Contine, the executive director of the Department of Taxation. They've agreed to it. I've talked to Gina Session, the AG that advises them, and she has reviewed it and thinks it's appropriate. So knowing that it is somewhat prospective, that it is with the Department of Taxation, and knowing that they are already collecting tax money, I think it's appropriate that we go forward at this time.
Okay.
Is the last part of this a reimbursement agreement with Tesla? That should be structured, doesn't it?
I'm not sure where you're reading that from.
I'm looking at the agenda here.
I might have made a mistake on the agenda packet.
Okay. Because it doesn't necessarily, it's not just necessarily from Tesla.
This agreement is not for Tesla.
Okay, so in the agenda is approve a cooperative agreement with the State of Nevada Department of Taxation, specifying the dates and procedures for distribution to Story County of the Economic Diversification District Number 1, revenues pledged pursuant to Ordinance Number 14-260, and then it has and a reimbursement agreement with Tesla. So that's what I'm asking. The way you stated this.
And so that's my fault. I should have corrected that. The reimbursement agreement was considered to be adopted at the same time as this. Since we're not doing that, that's something that is not before the board, the reimbursement agreement. So you're correct, yes.
So it would basically end pursuant to Ordinance 14-260.
Correct, yes.
Commissioner McGuffey, if I can kind of just paint you a very broad brush level, the state and their Department of Taxation are now obligated, now that the Governor's Office of Economic Development have recognized our diversification district and Tesla's and their partners, the other participants, not the lead participant only, but they have recognized them and are now essentially obligated to pass through all that they cannot abate. They can abate everything out of our 6.7 sales tax except 2.75%. So this agreement allows taxation to meet their legal obligations by passing those on to us. We will have legal obligations, but only at such time as we execute that second agreement between the county and Tesla to pass those through.
Okay, well, it's, we know that Tesla is the reason why this is generated, but this shouldn't be stated as just for Tesla. That's the way it appears.
Yeah, and I would defer to Bob, but I would say it's every eligible partner participating in Economic Diversification District 1. We called it Tesla because they're the lead participant but this should be for all the participants participating in the Tesla agreement.
So do we need to correct the verbiage on this, Mr. Morris?
I'm looking at the agreement itself, and what the Governor's Office on Economic Development did was they approved a certificate of eligibility for Tesla to pay or basically pay 2.75% in. They are the only participant at this point, and so I think it's okay to limit the agreement to Tesla. I think that if we're going to go ahead and have other participants or other projects come forward, that we would have to do a similar agreement with each one of those as they come along. And so I feel fairly comfortable that this is appropriate for Tesla at this point.
And I'll weigh in just a bit. I think, again, if I'm focused on where you everybody is looking, you're looking in the first recital that talks about the Story County Economic Diversification District number one. That is what you enacted by ordinance late last year. And then we have, this is not going to be the legal word, but we have named that whole district Tesla. So Bob and I and Gina could run that down, but I'm going to suggest to you all, subject to another legal opinion, that this covers everybody operating within that EDD, Panasonic, whoever else decides to come out there. Solar City can come in as well, if that's what they choose to do, within the boundaries of that Economic Diversification District. But we'll double check that, and if we have to, we'll bring it back and clean it up.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm good.
All right. Any other public comment? Ms. Dean.
Kay Dean, Virginia City Highlands. I'm confused. There's an Exhibit A attached to Agenda Item Number 19 that talks about, on March 2nd, yesterday, the signed agreement between Tesla and the Story County Economic Diversification District. Is there a copy of the agreement that was signed yesterday available? You refer to it in Exhibit A.
We'll have to modify Exhibit A.
Pardon me?
We'll need to modify Exhibit A.
Okay.
To say March 3rd. If they go ahead and approve it, that would be the correct date.
Okay. This,
and I agree, because that is not
a document that was signed yesterday. So it's inaccurate.
Yes, we'll make that change and clarify it.
Okay. And you'll clarify whether it's Tesla or everyone, too. Thank you.
You know what, Bob, and I hate to do this by remote control, but I would think there are enough good questions being asked out there, particularly this date. And since this one isn't as urgent, because it is integrally tied to our partner agreement with Tesla, I would recommend to staff continuing this. This is only an agreement, so we can continue it, some date down the road, either after we get clarification or probably more appropriately when we have the other agreement passing the monies from us to Tesla. And if you agree.
And that was my initial approach to this, was to have all the agreements done at the same time. I think we might have jumped the gun a little bit on this one, and so I agree that it's not effective until our ordinance is effective, which requires the government services agreement. So I don't think there's any harm in continuing this, and since there are a couple of things that have been pointed out that I would like to fix, I would agree with discontinuing it.
I apologize for some of the oversight. I will tell you, and first off, I want to thank a whole bunch of people in that room, but specifically Bob Morris, who's been stellar, Bill Maddox, who I'm aware is not there, Ann Langer for making both those two people available, and to you, Mr. Chairman, for joining us at the negotiating table. Even understanding and navigating SB1 has proven to be interpretive by some, not by us necessarily, as we work with Tesla's attorneys and LCB and the AG's office. But again, this type of stuff is a whole lot further along than this was even a week to 2 weeks ago. But our staff's going to recommend continuation on this until we get everything figured out and talked.
Very good. Any other public comment? Hearing none, then I'll go ahead and ask for a motion to continue item 19. Do you have a specific date in mind, Mr. Morris?
Not at this time.
Okay.
And it's just an agreement, so there's no noticing requirement for it. So okay. We can just set it the next time that we hear this.
Date two to be determined.
Yes.
Commissioner McGuffin?
Okay, I'll make a motion to continue item 19 and the continuation until the
I'll second your motion. Move the second to continue item 19. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye, and the motion carries. Okay, items 20 and 21 have already been continued. So now we'll move on to item number 22, possible action, licensing board second readings. All right. Mr. Osborne, you're going to take the lead on this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's recommended that items A through H, and I'll read them briefly, are approved, and items I, J, and K are continued. So the first one, again, is to approve A, Eagle Solutions, B, Bear Mobile, C, Wild Horse Gallery, D, Real Construction, E, Lero Enterprises, F, Spencer Media, G, Diamond Concrete, and H, Anson Power Engineering.
All right. I get a motion to approve items A through H.
I would place a motion to approve items A through H.
I'll second that motion.
We move the second to approve items A through H on item 22. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 And the motion carries.
And it's recommended that I, J, and K, that's MDB Trucking, Ionics, LLC, and Rich Doss, that they are continued for further permitting.
Motion on that. Continuing I, J, and K.
I'll make a motion to continue I, J, and K.
I'll second that motion.
Move the second to continue I, J, and K. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And motion carries. All right, here we go. Item number 23, public comment. Mark, come on up. You've been sitting patiently all day.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Mark Joseph Phillips, for the record. Since our county comptroller's here, I would like to address this conversation about park funds and, interest. I studied the issue. I found out if somebody wants to get to a real legal opinion, there's two ways that Hugh Gallagher could go. He could write a request for an opinion from Commission on Ethics, but this particular item, statute allows this question to be put before the director of the Department of Taxation and get a true legal answer. It's getting to the point now where somebody could start putting in their head misappropriation of funds. So I think the public would respect a true opinion from somebody who is allowed to give an opinion, and maybe the district attorney's office could help Mr. Gallagher write up the question and get an answer, rather than just kicking the can down the road. Apparently, the park funds are sitting empty. There's no earnest money. Where did all that money go? Second, at the last Fair and Recreation Board meeting, Chairman McBride and Commissioner Gilman were at the meeting when I brought up how I feel about VCTC operating their meetings without having retained or hired an attorney. And I brought up the fact that they cannot assume that our county's district attorney will represent them. So I'm disappointed that Commissioner Gilman or Chairman Chokover of the VCTC did not get this on the agenda today. I believe that county commissioners would have to agree, and also our district attorney, that our district attorney could represent the Fair and Rec Board, who should have their own attorney. Last year, the school board and district attorney Maddox screwed up the deed to Pipers. Boy, if a school district in Nevada is going to talk about owning real estate, the deed has to be in the name corporate. Well, that's the Storrs County School Board of Trustees. You cannot put the school district on the deed. So, fortunately, they have retained their own legal counsel. And I'll get the ball rolling on that. I worked really hard on that last year. Dang, nabbit. Now I've got to start all over again. All right.
Thank you, Mark. Who's next? Ms. Bean?
Kay Bean, Virginia City Highlands. At a recent property owners meeting, there was a suggestion to use the $10,000 that the county budgeted for the Highlands this year for Cartwright Road repairs. This main access road is in great need of crack sealing repairs to retain the integrity of the road before it is further damaged. The estimated cost to have this done are around $20,000. This $10,000 from the county will reduce the cost to the Property Owners Association by half and make it a much more manageable expense, especially as it is not an annually recurring item. I understand the two associations were not able to budget the estimated $13,000 for the work last year when the county agreed to do it, and the county indicated that they were too busy this year. Thus, the cost has risen to about $20,000 based on outside bids that were obtained. The repairs to Cartwright Road are needed even more so than last year, as conditions have continued to deteriorate. Cartwright Road is a main artery of the Highlands community and is used by both school buses and emergency vehicles, as well as residents. And is it also not a road used in an emergency if there's a closure on Highway 341 between Cartwright and Lousetown Roads? Both association boards are in verbal agreement that this is a beneficial and non-controversial use of the funds budgeted for this community. The timing is also fortunate, as the repairs must be done soon. Each board plans to provide a signed letter for the commissioners indicating their support for this use of the budgeted funds. As a commissioner representing the majority of the Highlands area, perhaps Commissioner McGuffey would act to oversee any process that might be involved to achieve this goal. He could attend both associations' board meetings, obtain their letters, and also have direct discussions as needed. If any obstacles arise, he would be in a position to handle any difficulties at once. Cartwright is a vital main road that is used daily by both Commissioner McGuffey and many of his constituents who've recently elected him to office. This is a great opportunity to promote a project that will improve access for all vehicles, as an expense that the county had already budgeted for and planned to spend in the Highlands. I hope that the process works smoothly to accomplish this funding. To me, this sounds like a win-win situation that everyone in the Highlands seems to support and also benefits the entire community. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Clark.
Nicole Bard, Story County resident. I don't recall hearing in Hughes' update on the park funds by which date certain will we have the final answer.
What's holding everything up now is waiting to get the appropriate interest rate from 1992. And anything beyond or prior to that, I don't have that information. State Treasury does not have that information, but is going to get that information for me. And in lieu of that, they're also going to get me some, hopefully get me some inroads with U.S. Treasury bond. And find out what rates they are, because I have to calculate. I have to calculate it right from the beginning, from the first permit that was received up through that. So if I don't have that information, I can't do the calculation. That's where I'm at.
Do you have the date that you received the first permit? You have all the information.
We have it all.
Okay, you have it all.
Right.
Okay, thank you. So there is no date certain. It could go on for another 6 months.
No.
Okay. So a date span.
As soon as I can get that information from the State Department, Nevada State Treasury, or from somebody from the feds that I've contacted, then that work will start immediately. I would like to get it done as soon as you do.
So?
Whenever I get it, that's when I'll start.
So there's no projection, there's no date there?
Whenever I
could expand to fill the time on the planet.
Whenever I get that information, I will start
working. All right, thank you.
I have a question on that issue. We've identified how much money is in the park fund, correct, as the baseline. What we haven't identified is the interest rate that we're going to apply that would have been earned.
Correct.
So it would seem to me, as long as, and we chatted earlier in the meeting, as long as we have the procedure and platform for its use, we could actually start allocating the money. We would just base the interest on what we know is in there.
Right.
But it doesn't necessarily freeze the park fund.
No, it never has freeze the park fund, Commissioner Kim. No.
So they are available to use. We just have to add the interest component as we know what that
is. They can get whatever they want right now.
So the numbers that you gave us in the last meeting that had, and I don't remember the Highlands number, but the Lockwood number is 46,000.
Right.
Are you saying that those numbers are the without interest numbers?
No, that's with interest.
Which interest?
That's with a penalty interest calculation that I had calculated some time ago before I went to get an opinion on whether penalty interest was applicable or not to this.
So the penalty interest you assumed in that number was the prime plus two?
Right.
And you were able to go as far back as 92?
Yes, because we had that. We had the prime plus two.
Okay, so which don't have a governmental instrument rates. Okay, so the numbers that were published are dirty numbers, so we don't know, as, let's say, the Highlands, what we would be drawing.
I guess we could come up with what the principal amount would be.
So can you give us the principal?
Yes.
That you've calculated?
Yes.
How can we get that?
Right after the meeting.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Okay. Any other public comment? Mr. Mitchell. It can be on any subject.
Just letting Mr. Gallagher know so I didn't have to hang out up here. So, Clay Mitchell, Virginia City resident. Commissioners, thank you for your hard work. I know these meetings are long and there's lots to be covered. I sent an email a week or two ago about an idea, and I was just hoping to reiterate it in person, and if it has merit, I'd be happy to file a formal request to agendize it. And it had to do with, I'm very pleased with the request from Commissioner Gilman that staff look at reducing property tax rates. As I've shared that with friends from other parts of the country, their eyebrows all raised. They said it's a very uncommon thing for governments to be looking at. And I feel very, very fortunate to be here in a county that we're looking at some substantial growth in the future. The idea that I was mulling over had to do with if there was a possibility to lower the starting business license rates for basic and home businesses at least, and possibly going up from there. And the reason I ask about that is because it seems like there would be an additional benefit in the perception of business friendliness and also just economic activity if we were to take some of the windfall or the revenue that's coming in and plow back into lowering the bar of entry for people who want to start businesses here in the county. And certainly I don't know if it's possible to segregate out just those in-county businesses, but it seems like that's where you get the most bang for your buck, or you can leave the rates where they are for out-of-county businesses that come to do business here, but those who actually are willing to relocate or locate here or start here. The thing that prompted me to think about this was my son was saying he wanted to set up a lemonade stand to earn some money to buy some Legos, and I said, well, we probably should check with the city to see, or with the county to see what would be required. And we're looking at $150, $200 if he wants to do it on a regular basis. Now, there may be some dispensation if he does that as part of the events that happen here. There may be some sort of an event license that he could do that under. But that's a pretty steep startup cost for a 7-year-old to go sell some lemonade outside of events or on the street corner. So anyway, I just thought I would bring it up again. If it does have merit, I'd be happy to file a formal request to agendize it if it seems that that might be something that's beneficial for the community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other public comment? I've got one thing. If anyone knows of anybody who needs some dentistry done, Dr. Sykes in Reno, my wife happens to work in his office, next Friday, March 13th, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., they'll do free dentistry. You can get one free extraction, one filling, or one cleaning. The problem is it only goes from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. If you know anybody that wants to participate, they need to be there by 6 a.m. probably, because the line goes down the street, and they have all the staff working there, and they bring in staff from other offices to help out. So in any event, it's 855 West 7th Street, Unit 5 in Reno, and the phone number is 229-8672. And I'll forward this to Jesse, and she can put it on the e-blast that goes out. And I'll forward it to Sean at Community Chest, too, because they deal with a lot of low-income individuals at that facility. So anyway, it's a good deal. They only do it once a year. I know there's other dentists in Reno that do the same thing, but it's a pretty good project for these doctors and for patients who can't afford dental care. So anyway, I think that's going to conclude it. Mr. County Manager, thanks for joining us today. And although we sympathize with your illness, we appreciate you not coming in here and passing it on to the rest of us.
Thank you, and thank you for your indulgence. You know, we've had commissioners in the past participate in your conference call, and it's not easy. But we'll work on our systems, particularly from the podium, because I've been a good exercise for me to learn where we're good and how we need to improve. But thank you all very much.
Very good. Anyone else? Meeting's adjourned. I'm going to have to reload because I'm starting to get down. I do too. Different.